time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now, here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello, I'm Alyssa Barnes, and you are listening to episode number 5 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today's guest is filmmaker Justin Kaler. He specializes in making films in the Western genre, and his current project is a documentary about the life of Casey Tibbs. If you don't know who Casey Tibbs is, he was a legendary saddle bronc rider. Casey won multiple world championships in the saddle bronc riding, the bareback riding, and the all-around. He was also a Hollywood stuntman and actor. In this episode, Justin and I talk a lot about Casey's life and the film that he's currently in the process of making, and also how you can get involved in contributing to the film if you are so inclined. It's a really great story, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with you all today, as well as seeing the movie when it comes out. So without further ado, let's jump in to my conversation with Justin. Earn Your Spurs listeners, allow me to introduce you to our guest today, Justin Kaler. Justin is a film producer who has worked on projects airing on the History Channel, Discovery, Weather Channel, HGTV, and PBS. His first independent film entitled The Buffalo King, The Man Who Saved the American Bison, is an award-winning documentary on the film festival circuit and has aired on public television in all 50 states. The film he is currently working on, called Floating Horses, chronicles the life of rodeo legend Casey Tibbs. Justin, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've given the listeners just a brief introduction, so why don't you tell us a little more about yourself, how you got into filmmaking, and why specifically this Western genre?
Well, I was born and raised on a ranch in South Dakota. So, you know, my dad is the true cowboy, you know, cattle ranch. My mom's a nurse. She also grew up on a ranch. So I guess it's obviously in my blood to kind of have that Western heritage and that passion for Western history. I went off to college. I was a basketball player, played basketball in college, always kind of that competitive edge, always looking to improve no matter what I'm doing. And when I finished with that, I was, you know, looking for things to do, and I was taking sports broadcasting. So I actually went to college to be a sportscaster, and I kind of drifted away from that and moved out to Denver and got with a couple great companies out here. As you mentioned, worked on shows varying from the Weather Channel to HGTV, and then had the opportunity to work on Civil War, The Untold Story, which has been airing all across the nation on PBS and doing really well. And just really lucky to work under some talented people, some people I can look up to and learn from. And I finally got to the point where I was like, you know what? I really want to take a stab at creating my own product, producing my own films and telling my own stories. And I reverted back to my South Dakota upbringing and what South Dakota has to offer. So I was like, well, I'll start there. That's what I know. And I stumbled across pretty much the Buffalo King. And they were doing a wagon train in his honor during the summer, and they were looking for somebody to shoot this 5-day, 90-mile wagon train across South Dakota. And they'd asked me, they'd heard that I was doing some filmmaking. I was like, yeah, sure. But one stipulation was that I'll shoot the wagon train and film the wagon train, but I'm going to do a story on Scotty Phillip, because the second I looked into his life, I was like, this guy's story has to be told. And they were like, yeah, not a problem. So that was my first leap into something that was, you know, produced on my own. And it's just gone above and beyond what I ever expected. We didn't have much of a budget. It was kind of guerrilla style filmmaking. And it's just a great story. And, you know, it was quite a run. We got picked up by PBS. We won awards on film festivals. We have an upcoming article in Cowboys and Indians magazine, a feature article. October 21st, it comes out. So it's been an amazing journey. And then Casey. So Casey had always been in the back of my mind. I knew about him, obviously, being from South Dakota, but didn't really know the depth and the details of who he was as a person and a man. And once again, once I started diving into Casey's life, it was really a no-brainer. I'd be foolish not to jump on it. And so I did. And I've been working on it for just about a year. And we're finally to the point at the end of this month of August, we're going to start our first interviews. So it's awesome. It's been a journey, but a fun one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Well, why don't we step back for a second and have you tell us a little bit about the story behind the Buffalo King?
As in Scotty or as in the film?
Yeah.
Well, Scotty Phillip, that's his nickname came because he immigrated from Scotland in 1874. He was like 15 years old. And I always say to people, we barely let kids drive around the block in a car on their own at 15. And here's Scotty Phillip coming over on a boat to the Wild West. You know, there was nothing out here. And I just can only imagine. You know, he'd read things in dime novels. He had a few relatives over here that were sending back these letters about, you know, how great it was. Kind of the common thing you heard back then, you know, rivers full of gold and all this free land and all this stuff. So he came over and, well, they put him to work. And he was like, well, this is what I was doing over in Scotland. This is not why I came over here. I came over here to, you know, make a living and to make my fortune. And so he hightailed it right away out of Kansas. He was down in Hays, Kansas, and it was right during the time of the Black Hills Gold Rush. So he got on a horse with a few supplies, once again, a teenager, and rode from Kansas all the way up to the Black Hills through Indian country, through, you know, wild outlaws. I mean, who, God knows what it really was like back then, right? You know, riding out there on your own. And he got up to the Black Hills thinking he's going to strike it rich. Didn't happen. He was pretty epic failure. He ended up like chopping wood for the people that did make it and doing little odd end jobs. And then he finally got into the cattle business. He slowly started buying little bits and pieces of cattle. He married a woman that was part Cheyenne and part French. And by doing that, which a lot of settlers did, Scotty didn't realize at that time that land was going to be given to the Native American people, like out on the plains. So did Scotty see it coming? Did he hear rumors? I don't know. That's kind of one of the debates in the film of why did he really marry Sarah Larrabee? And was it for love? Was it for free land? But he married her before the land was available. So that was kind of a controversy within the film a bit. But he ended up getting some land, started accumulating more cattle. And by when it was all said and done, he was one of the largest cattlemen in the United States, easily. I mean, he had hundreds of thousands of acres, you know, 40,000 head of cattle, just an empire, really. And so he struggled and struggled and then eventually did make his empire. And through that whole time, he had known and seen the buffalo. He'd seen its demise. He'd seen these, you know, bodies laying out on the prairies, just wilting away, and all these hides on train cars. And by the time he was able to actually do something about it, a man by the name of Fred Dupree had captured a small herd of calves and built up just a small number of bison that were just grazing out on his pastures. And he passed away, and Scotty offered to purchase them. And it was, most people say, at least through documents, was about $10,000. And in today's number, that was $250,000 that he bought that herd for. So that tells you the wealth that he had. And so he bought that and built that buffalo herd, just over 1,000, right around 1,000. And that his herd was the largest in the world. And so the term the Buffalo King came about. And then his, you know, he really didn't live much longer after he purchased the herd. He died at a really young age. And that was kind of one of the tragic events of the story, and really, you know, emotional, and really pulls the strings on people's hearts. It's a pretty sad story. After he bought it, he passed away fairly quickly. So a lot of people wonder, what could he have done? I mean, he was only like 52 years old, and he was already a state senator. He had, you know, was a key contributor in saving the bison from extinction, had all these forward thinking ideas that a lot of people didn't have back then. So an incredible man and just a great story.
Is there a way to still see it, or is it still airing on PBS, or can you buy the video or anything like that?
I believe it's still airing. I'm looking to get some numbers from PBS on where it's been airing. But for sure you can get a DVD. You can go to as simple as Amazon and just type in the Buffalo King, and you can purchase it there. We're also on Facebook. I've been kind of keeping a journal of sorts, putting up facts, photos, just type in the Buffalo King on Facebook, and I promise you it'll take you about a week to get through all the information that's on there.
Wow,
there's a ton of info, a ton of stories. It's been fun. Educational for me, and hopefully educational and entertaining for the people that have viewed it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to check that out. So moving on to your latest project, you know, it's interesting because I've been around rodeo my whole life and I've always known who Casey Tibbs is and about his titles, but I don't know very much about him as a person. So I'm really interested to, you know, see your finished product. And I think that's going to be really fascinating. How did you come up with the name for the film?
Floating Horses?
Yeah.
Floating Horses comes from Casey's style of riding a saddle bronc. And when he busted out on the scene, once again, like Scotty, as a teenager, he was really young. Most of these guys that were rodeoing at this time were older. Not like today. You know, a lot of the cowboys today are younger. And when Casey came on as a young boy, basically, there was no one his age. So he really wasn't developed as a man, if you would say. And he was kind of a frail, kind of thin guy anyway, with not a whole lot of strength. So he had to find a way to balance that, I guess, is probably the best way. And he used simply balance and timing, rhythm. He studied. I don't know how many guys back then really studied a horse. He put a lot of thought into studying. But Floating Horses comes from the way he rode. He revolutionized. A lot of people say he was the author of saddle bronc riding. No one had rid the way he rode before. And I think that added to why people wanted to come see him. I mean, people heard he was going to be at a rodeo. They showed up to see him because he was doing things no one had ever seen. You know, people call him the Babe Ruth of rodeo, the Muhammad Ali of rodeo. He really did. He changed the sport in so many ways. Not only the way he participated in the sport in saddle bronc riding, the way he dressed, the way he acted, it just was never seen. But Floating Horses, yeah, it's how he rode. It was a combination of balance and timing and rhythm riding. And it just was never seen before. And that's how a lot of people described it, was he floated a horse. And when I heard that and I was reading that in a lot of my research, it just stuck out. I was like, oh, that is floating. That is so cool. And Floating Horses. And I feel like if somebody doesn't know anything about rodeo, about the Western world, about horses, people still are interested in horses. There's that kind of fascination. And I feel like if they see it on a poster, Floating Horses, they're going to be like, what does that mean? Much like yourself. So it's finding that creative way to draw people in. And I think it accomplishes that.
Yeah, it's a cool title. What kind of person was Casey? I mean, what was his story like?
You know, that's the fun thing about research also, is I've spoken with so many people, so many, all the way from Cleo Harrington, who was former Miss South Dakota and Casey's first wife, to Larry Mahan, to Buck Taylor, all these people. And everybody has kind of the same view, but different. You know, Casey once said, it's sometimes hard to be Casey Tibbs. I think he had created this larger than life character that he could never even live up to. And maybe it was a combination of himself, a combination of that reputation that the cowboy had of back then, you know, of, you know, living life to the fullest and going out and partying. And, you know, he had to live up to all that. And then, of course, having the name Casey Tibbs. But he was a very generous man. I know a lot of people know that, some don't. He did a lot of things for children, loved kids, would always take the time to go to a hospital to visit with sick kids, which I find really great. He was passionate. He was passionate about life. I mean, he lived, I've said this and it's something we'll talk about in the film. A lot of these guys that live life to the fullest, they usually don't live very long. They really don't, you know. And Casey was that way. He was only 60 when he passed away. So he lived life with a passion. He had rodeo as a passion. He did more for rodeo than I don't know if anybody ever had. And maybe even to this day. I mean, he really brought it to national attention with how he was trying to promote overseas. He tried to bring back those Wild West shows. He went to Brussels. He went to Japan. He was one of the guys that started the NFR. I don't know if a lot of people know that. He was, if not the guy, he was a part of that small group that really brought that. He the Bucking Horse of the Year Award. I mean, that was created by Casey Tibbs. I mean, there's wow. there's all these things that he did to just push the sport forward because he loved it so much. And I think he saw that there was more there. You know, yeah, they were performing in Madison Square Garden and in Boston and all these big venues, but he saw it as bigger. Because I think America and our Americans and people that are non-Americans are so fascinated with the cowboy. And I think he knew that. And I think he thought it was a way that he could expand it and make it bigger than what it was. And he had his failures. I mean, he did a lot of these things and he fell flat on his face and he admitted to a lot of them, but he kept doing them. And that's what I liked about it. So you get bucked off a horse and you get back on. He used that same terminology in life, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like we could use him in rodeo today still to help us promote know, it.
That also is one of those questions that I'll ask, you know, some of our, you know, like Larry Mahan. That's a question I'll ask him. Does rodeo need a guy like Casey Tibbs? You know, that's a loaded question. You know, it may offend some people, it may not. But Casey was, man, he was bigger than life. He was pretty incredible. Was he perfect? By no means. He had a lot of flaws. Those are things we'll talk about also in the film, are the things that really made him human and kind of grounded him. But that's what made him. That's why we still talk about him today, I think. I mean, no one is perfect. I'm not perfect. And I think that's what's going to make that story so interesting, is he has such extreme highs and then he has very low bottoms. So what a story. What a life.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome. So throughout your research about Casey, have you found any interesting stories about him that you could share?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of stories. Some you can't share. Maybe we'll put on the film. That way we can put like a PG-13 rating or something on it. But oh man, there are so many stories, and I think it's a combination of lore and truth. I mean, things get embellished. He did a lot of crazy things. Probably one of my favorite, and a lot of people know about, is his blindfolded ride. A guy, and this is kind of shortened, so I'll shorten it up for you. But he was at a rodeo, and a guy got on a horse and got bucked off. And Casey's, you know, sitting on the chute or whatever on the fence and is kind of talking smack like, hey, nice ride, buddy, or whatever. Hey, I could have ridden that blindfolded, you know, just kind of talking smack. And the guy was kind of mad about it, and he's like, all right, Casey, if you think you can do it blindfolded, then put your money where your mouth's at. And it was supposedly like $1,000 bet or something like that, which back then, you know, this is probably in the late 50s or early 60s. That's a lot of money. And so Casey took the bet. One of his flaws, he was a gambler. But he won a lot and he lost a lot. But so Casey accepted the bet, and I think some other guys threw in some money. They put a blindfold on him. They checked to make sure he couldn't see. They let him out of the chute. And there's actual a photograph of the event of Casey riding with a blindfold on. And Casey rode that horse blindfolded and got off and collected the money. But a little bit of the side story is that Casey knew, had ridden that horse before. So he knew every lick, every jump. He knew what to expect. So he felt pretty comfortable doing it blindfolded. But then kind of the legend of the story, which it'll be fun to hear some people tell, is that he had put quarters between his boots and the stirrups while he rode blindfolded and kept those quarters beneath between the stirrups and his boots during the whole ride, and then jumped off and threw the quarters to the crowd. So
that's a pretty
there's a
story.
Combination of legend and truth, which is a fun story. And I've got one guy that I know I really want to tell it, 'cause he told it to me over the phone and it was incredible, probably way better than I could tell it. But, those are some fun ones. There's the one where, you know, he was friends with Roy Rogers. Roy was in his wedding. He was his best man. And there's a story at Madison Square Garden where Roy would come out, you know, doing his show with his flamboyant stuff on, much like Casey. And he'd be shooting his pistols, you know, bam, 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 and the crowd's going crazy. Well, Casey had snuck up to the rafters with some dead pigeons. And as Roy is boom, 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 shooting his blanks, of course, Casey's throwing dead pigeons down from the rafters. And, of course, Roy gets embarrassed and rides off. And that's kind of another quick story that's kind of a fun one of that he pulled on Roy. And I always say, how many people could have done that to Roy Rogers and get away with it? I think Roy was pretty mad about it for a little while, but only Casey. And he was a legendary prankster. That's one of the things Casey was known for, is just these elaborate pranks. Some good, some bad. Some people laughed at him. I think some people wanted to probably punch him. I think it's a combination, but he was a prankster for sure.
It sounds like it. That's pretty funny. Oh, so I read that Cole Elshier is going to be in the movie. What is his role going to be? And then are there any other sort of rodeo guys in the movie?
As for Cole, we are so blessed to have Cole Elshier on board. When I was searching for somebody, because we knew we wanted to do some reenactments, something really cinematic, silhouettes, you know, shallow depth of field. Not really have to look like Casey, but more the form of Casey. But we got to have somebody that knows what they're doing. And if we're going to do bronc riding scenes, I can't just throw any Joe on a horse, because the rodeo community will get up out of their seat and laugh us off the stage. So I kind of started searching, asking, and Cole's name always came up. And I contacted him, and he got back to me right away. And he's like, yeah, I'd be interested. What's great is he's from Fay, South Dakota. So he's a South Dakota saddle bronc rider. Casey's from South Dakota. I like having those type of connections within a film. So, and Cole is obviously really talented at what he does. So he's going to make us look good. He's going to make Casey proud. I know it. Corco Rodeos is going to help us out with some stock. So we'll get together. We're thinking probably the Fort Pierre Arena. Once again, keep it close to Casey's roots, and get together with Cole, get together with Corco Rodeos, and do some saddle bronc riding, do some great slow motion footage of them riding. I can only imagine, you know, with the horses' manes and the hats and the arm, just all the movements that are involved. If we can slow it down, it'll look really cool. So do some great things with that. And then, of course, his reenactment scenes. And didn't want to put the pressure again of him having to come out with this Oscar-winning performance. We don't want to put that pressure on somebody. So it's just the motions. It's the form. It's, you know, walking up to a chute. It's working with your saddle. It's maybe just riding across the prairie. Maybe it's just walking on the prairie or whatever. But Cole will add that authenticity to it. He's a great name to have involved with the project, and he's excited with the project. So we're really lucky. Unfortunately, we probably won't be shooting his stuff till next spring, because we've got to do all the interviews. And a lot of those interviews, like you mentioned, we hope to have other cowboys involved, like Larry Mahan. I'm hoping to get like Chad Furley involved. Jeff Willard is another cowboy from out of South Dakota. He actually, his family's probably, I don't even know if it's 15 minutes from my family's ranch. So I've known Jeff for a long time, but he's a world champion. We want guys that have been there and done it, and that can really tell what does it take to be a world champion. Because Casey was a multiple world champion. He did it for a long period of time, and he's got, you know, closets. Well, I guess he got rid of a lot of his buckles, or he lost a lot of his buckles, but you know, he won a lot of awards and a lot of world championships. So we want people that can talk in that same level as what Casey did. So people like Jeff, Chad, Larry, hopefully we can add a few more people on board. Maybe some guys that worked with him. I've talked with Deb Copenhaver. I hope we can get up to like the Spokane area and interview him. He actually traveled with Casey, so imagine the stories he can tell. Firsthand experience. So it's a lot of work getting these people together. And that's where, you know, that's the fun part. And I hope that we have the funds to be able to get all these interviews and hear all these men talk about what it takes to become a world champion. Because it's not easy, and it's dangerous. It's tiring. There's a lot more than the public knows. And that's one of the messages I want to get across, is that number one, these guys are athletes. Number two, it's extremely dangerous. And number three, it's a lot of work. And compared to other pro athletes, they don't really get paid as much as those guys do. So those are things that I want the public to understand, the difficulties that are involved with being a professional rodeo cowboy or cowgirl.
Yeah, that's awesome. And especially you growing up in South Dakota, I mean, that's basically the bronc riding capital of the world there. Yeah, yeah. You got the Ettbauers and I've followed saddle bronc riding for a long time. It's always been kind of my favorite event, and I've always had a lot of friends that were involved. And so I actually know Jeff Willard. I mean, a little bit. He's a pretty fun guy.
Yeah.
But that's really cool. I'm glad that you're gonna pull so many different people into the film that are connected to rodeo. And you know, I think it's great to have a platform to get those voices out there, because there's so many amazing untold stories.
Yeah.
And this is just really cool.
Yeah. And it's going to be hard. The hard part is we'll never cover all of Casey's life. It's impossible to do things like that within a film anyway, maybe within a book, but within a film, it would be impossible to do that. It's impossible to interview everybody that knew him. I mean, we've got such a huge list of people, and it's going to be hard to even get to all those people. Number one, financially, but it would be impossible to have 50 people to put into a film.
Right.
My editor would probably strangle me if I had that many people, even though it'd be nice. But we'll do our best to get as many voices to connect the older generation and also the younger generation. I want that younger generation to see someone like Chad or Jeff, and they know that they've been world champion saddle bronc riders, and they can connect, and they'll have an interest of maybe they'll want to watch it because they're in it, and maybe they don't know much about Casey. But I think even the younger cowboys and cowgirls will, once they start hearing Casey's story, they're just going to be like, wow, who is this guy? He was really doing this like flying in airplanes. He was one of the first guys to fly from rodeo to rodeo. And they were doing it in these, just as he called it, a death trap. So, I mean, think of all these, let alone getting on a horse, or I mean, and he was a bull rider too. So, I mean, getting on a horse, a bull, whatever, for Casey, that's dangerous enough. Well, now he's getting in these airplanes that are pretty much being held together with duct tape, and traveling from rodeo to rodeo. And then he's driving his purple Cadillac, you know, and going 120 miles an hour down the road. Just what a crazy life. It's amazing he even lived to be 60, to be honest. All the crazy things that I've heard is he probably dodged death quite a few times.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that you mentioned on Facebook that it's possible that the Electric Horseman was based after Casey Tips. And I'd never heard that before.
Yeah, I've heard that a couple times. It's kind of funny what you unravel. And you kind of believe it. I mean, Robert Redford, he's dressed in purple. I mean, Casey never had lights on his, but with all the glitz and glitter on his clothing, it was almost probably like Casey was wearing lights. I mean, that's another thing. His fashion was just, who is this guy? You know, he's showing up at a rodeo, and these old timers are probably like, okay, this kid better be good. And thankfully he was a phenom. He got on a horse and they were just like, okay, maybe we'll let the purple silk shirts go because this kid is incredible. But yeah, I mean, I think there's more, and I hope this is uncovered, and maybe some stuff that I've never heard before too. That's the fun thing about a documentary. You start talking with people and these stories start to unravel that you'd never heard before. Casey influenced, I think, more than we realize. And I think he influences things today more than we realize. And those are the interesting things that maybe we can find out from some of these people that I've just never been able to uncover in a book or talking with people. Until we really sit down and the right question is asked and they come with an answer. And I'm like, what, really? So Casey did so much. He lived life to the fullest. And then I think he was overflowing the glass even after he lived it to the fullest. So he had his hands in a lot of things. And, you know, I think it's, like I said, the combination of pushing the sport of rodeo, pushing his own brand, pushing his own name, and then just living life. I think he was afraid of where he came from and the fact that he was born in the Great Depression and they had nothing. I mean, they were literally dirt poor. And I have a feeling that maybe had a factor in why he just lived it to the fullest. Because I don't think he had anything. I know he said, well, we didn't know we were poor. Well, guess what, Casey, when you were making in today's value about $400,000 a year, I think you probably looked back to where you came from and was like, wow, that sod / log cabin home is looking pretty scant right now. So I know he says we didn't know we were poor, but as he got older and became wealthy, I think he had to look back and was like, wow, look at where I came from. And maybe that's why he just didn't really, he didn't really value money that much. He seemed to just kind of hand it out and give it away and gamble it away. And at the end of the day, he really didn't have much when he passed away. But it's, once again, it adds to his story.
Yeah. And he probably at the time didn't realize they were poor, but like you said, I mean, when you go from one extreme to another, you do realize it.
Oh yeah. And that is complete opposite ends of the spectrum from where they were. I mean, there were times, I think Casey, they were making his clothes out of gunny sacks from what some family members were saying, or he was getting hand-me-downs from his dad and his brothers and his siblings. So yeah, it was pretty rough. I was told once that he hated pancakes because they ate pancakes all the time because it was a cheap way to feed their kids. Yeah. You know, they had 10, there's 10 total kids. So oh my gosh. Someone once said he hated pancakes and I was like, really? And he's like, well, yeah, it's a cheap meal for a poor family to feed their children. And so there you go. He never ate pancakes. I don't think after he left home,
you're like, who hates pancakes?
I know, exactly.
Not even possible.
No pancake social with Casey Tibbs. I don't think he'd show up.
He wasn't planning any of those.
No.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, gosh, what a fascinating person. And I'm sure this whole process of just digging up this information has been really amazing for you.
It has. It's educational, as I mentioned with the Buffalo King. It's educational. You learn just for the sense of, you know, passing this information on to people down the line, but it's also inspirational. It's inspirational to me with Scotty Phillip and the Buffalo King of what he did. It's inspirational with Casey. They both came from really nothing and created great things and did great things. And when I, you know, whenever I feel like, oh, you know, I'm down and out about something, I was just like, no, you have no place to be mad about something or to be discouraged about something because of the two men that I'm doing films on. These guys, they really, I mean, I don't even know. Imagine living in Scotty Phillips' time. You know, I don't know if any of us could live in that era. I mean, we're so spoiled by technology and air conditioning and suntan lotion. I mean, these people were out in the elements. There was nothing. It was just bare bones. And even Casey, you know, as we mentioned how he grew up out there in the middle of the South Dakota prairie, those were difficult times, different eras, but difficult times. And Casey, like I said, he was during the Great Depression. Man, imagine living through the Great Depression during the Dust Bowl. It's just those stories you hear, it's just heartbreaking. I mean, those people, those were tough, truly tough people. Truly tough people.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. So I wanted to ask you, I know you've used some different fundraising platforms for this project. And in case anyone is interested, I wanted to see if you are still doing that and let people know where they can contribute.
Yeah, this is the hardest part. Maybe some of the things that a lot of people don't understand is I'm not backed by like a big Hollywood studio or anything like that. This is strictly me having a passion for storytelling, me have a passion for these great Western stories. And so I've got to raise money pretty much on my own, find sponsors, find donors. And one great thing is the Casey Tibbs Rodeo Center in Fort Pierce, South Dakota, has just this beautiful museum. It's basically a tribute to Casey Tibbs, all sorts of Casey Tibbs stuff there. Just an awesome place to go. Great memorabilia, things that we can use within the film, photos, clothing. Mm-hmm. And so I've teamed up with them. And so if someone, whether it's a business or a private individual, wants to come on board with, you know, like, hey, we really want to put forward some funding and help him get out to get these interviews and get this film made, they can go through them since they're a nonprofit and we've teamed with them. And they can write a check out to them, donate money to them, and then that in turn will go towards the film. So all they have to do is contact the Casey Tibbs Rodeo Center in Fort Pierre, and they will be able to get them set up. And we've had quite a few people go through them with donations. And if you just want to, I mean, hey, $10, $20, those things add up. Those go a long way to getting these type of things done. Every dollar counts. And if you just want to do a small donation like that, you can contact us through Facebook and I can get information. And that's just Floating Horses, the Life of Casey Tibbs, and that'll pop up. So there's the Casey Tibbs Rodeo Center. There's our Facebook. And they can also email me if they want to. I can give you my email if you want.
Yeah, sure. Like
that. So that's JZ as in zebra, and then my last name, KOEHLER @gmail.com. So it's JZKOEHLER @gmail. And you can email me, Facebook, or through the Rodeo Center. So we've got a couple different avenues of trying to raise funds. That's really the hardest part. And we've done really well so far. We've got enough to go out to, we'll be going down to Texas, as I mentioned, at the end of this month to get 5 interviews. And then we hope to go out to the Tucson, Phoenix area to get another maybe 4 interviews. And then we'll make some trips to South Dakota. So we've got a little bit of funds. We've got to really be smart with what we have and really stretch that dollar. So definitely if there's someone or someone's business that would like to come on board, we are, our door is open for sure to help us get this done.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll link to all those in the show notes as well. So when someone comes on the website to at earnyourspurs.com to listen to the podcast, they'll be able to link to any of those places that you mentioned.
So great. Thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. So when is your planned release date for the film? Do you have one yet?
Yeah, we hope to release the film at the end of 2015. So you know, maybe December 2015, somewhere around there. I like how things are setting up. Like I said, with our funding, we're at least getting a good start. And I feel like if we can get, I don't know, 5 to 10 interviews of various people with various points of view, put together a little sizzle, a little kind of trailer of the film, maybe a 2-minute deal, and get that out there, and people will now really see who's involved with the film. I think we will draw even more attention, even though we're, I mean, so thankful, like yourself and everybody else, all the publicity we have gotten has been great. But I really want to show everybody, look, this is who we have. This is what this is going to look like. These are the sound bites we're going to get. And we're not messing around. You know, this is, we're getting this done and we're getting the right people on board. And so I feel like if we can get that together, that's going to jumpstart some more fundraising. And I feel confident that we can have it done by the end of 2015, which would be fantastic.
Yeah, that would be great. And I agree with you, getting that trailer together, I'm sure would be helpful. I also think that releasing in December is not a bad idea because it coincides with the NFR, you know, people are already thinking about rodeo and, you know, Casey was kind of the king. So
yes,
that's... Yeah.
Well, I hope to be there. I hope to be at the finals this year. I hope to.
Oh, good. I think I'm planning on being there as well. So if we're there at the same time, maybe we can.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I hope to have that trailer by that time. It's one of my goals is to have that nice little trailer with some of these interviews and carrying around on a laptop or something with some speakers and be able to let people see kind of who's involved and really get that buzz, you know, like throw gasoline on that fire, if you will.
Yeah, it'd be neat if you could somehow get linked up with the live feed and where they show it at the casinos and kind of get on there somehow.
Yeah, yeah. It's
at the South Point or something like that. Yeah. That would be really neat.
Casey still has some contacts there. There's still a lot of people there that knew Casey personally when he was
there.
So there's a lot of great contacts. True. I've spoken with a few of them. So I just would probably have to, you know, revisit those conversations and let them see what we have. And I'm sure they might be interested. I think it'll stop people as they're walking if they see something like that with some great images of Casey and some of these, you know, legends of the Western, you know, movies and of the rodeo world. I think it'll stop people in their tracks and grab their attention.
I think so too.
Throw some of Casey's purple up there and get them to look.
Rodeo people really appreciate when someone takes an interest in their world and like, you know, you going to all this effort to develop the story, that means something to people. So I think you'll have a really good response.
That's good. That's what I'm hoping for. It's been a year. I've been working on this basically myself. And so the end of this month with these interviews is just going to be so thrilling and such a weight lifted off my shoulder to be able to finally get out and get it, because it's been a year of just research, calling, cold calling people, not knowing how people are going to react and trying to locate things. And it's just, you know, trying to spread the word. And it's a lot of work when you have a full-time job, like I mentioned at the beginning.
Yes, you know, I understand that.
I have a 2-year-old son, you know, and so you're trying to, you know, you want family time and you have your 9-to-5 job, but then it's fitting in time to do stuff for this project. Like last night I was up till, gosh, it was about midnight working on some new posters for the film that I want to release at least one before our trip at the end of this month. So I'm just kind of creating, you know, some artwork and things like that. But I got to do it when the wife and kid go to sleep and I'm down there working on Photoshop, putting stuff together. So it's just finding time to, I try to put in about 20 hours a week along with the 40 hours at my other job. So
I'm in the same boat with you right now. So I know exactly what you're talking
about. That's good. I'm glad.
You're not the only one. You're not alone.
Yeah, that's probably why I look sleepy if I look tired, because I run off about 4 hours of sleep every night.
That's rough.
Yeah.
Well, Justin, I really appreciate you being here today. I just have one last question to ask that I ask all of my guests, and that is, what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
Wow. Well, I'm gonna use your show name here on Earn Your Spurs, and I'm going to use it to myself. Even though I grew up on a ranch, I probably haven't earned my spurs to be able to give some of these professional cowboys and working cowboys a whole lot of advice. So I'm going to steal from Casey. Casey has all the cred in the world, way more than I do. Casey used to say, never leave home for a second. Mm-hmm. And I think most people, when they hear it, they initially think sport. They think rodeo. Like, oh yeah, of course. You know, Casey, I could see him every time he walked into arena. You know, he pretty much just about won, but he went in there with that, like everybody went in there with the attitude of, I want first place. And that's Casey's way of doing it. And he got a lot of first places, but I think it also pertains to his life. I think when he walked out of that door of his house, when he walked out of the door of his parents' house as a teenager and left them behind, I think he had that perception of, I can't come back. I have to come back as number one. Because there's a great story, and I'll leave it as a teaser, with Casey and his dad. Some people may know it, but there was some friction between those two, and we'll explain it in the film. But I know for a fact that when he walked out of that door, he said to himself, if I'm leaving home and I come back, I've got to be number one. I you know, never leave home for second. And when he left, so I think there's the sports side of it, and there's the life side of it for Casey. And that would be my advice, is no matter what facet it is, when you walk out of that door, whether it's to go rope a calf or if it's just to go live life, never leave home for a second.
I would say that's pretty good advice for anyone, whether they have a cowboy hat or not.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Well, awesome, Justin. Thank you so much. I am really excited to see the film and see everything that you come up with along the way. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I really hope you enjoyed today's episode with Justin Kaler. As always, you can find all the links and resources that were mentioned in the episode at earnyourspurs.com in the show notes for this episode. The Earn Your Spurs podcast has been live for just a little under a month now, and I hope you've been enjoying it. If so, I would be incredibly grateful if you would hop on over to iTunes and leave a review for the show. It just helps iTunes to be able to rank the show so that more people who are looking for this topic can find it. Thank you so much for listening today. As always, feel free to reach out to me at earnyourspurs.com, on Twitter, on Facebook. I absolutely love hearing from you, so don't hesitate to reach out to me. Have a fabulous day, and we'll see you next week.
For listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.